Okay, I think we're ready to start. Boker Tov, everybody. Hope everybody's doing well. I can't welcome the people in Israel because now that we changed the clock. So my sister said she's in Evrat still, but obviously they can't come because it's basically Shabbos now in Israel. But okay, so we have a North American, which should be learning should be a schud for the situation in Israel. Okay, this is class 104 in our ongoing series, and basically we're going to focus as we just began last week. On the second paragraph of the Shema, Vaya im Shamoa. And we mentioned last week that the Rashi points out sort of the fundamental difference between the first and the second paragraph. There's a lot of repetition. Tfilin, Avat Hashem, Telavgat, Mezuzah, Tfilin, learning Torah. Half of the second paragraph is really a repetition of the first paragraph. So that in of itself is not the end of the world. Remember, they're five chapters apart in the Torah. I mean, there's lots of repetition in the Torah. I know we were all trained, and not that it isn't true, but we were all trained that whenever there's repetition in the Torah is, there's a reason. The Torah just doesn't repeat something. That is true, but it may not be 100% true. There are things that are just, and for sure some of the commentaries say that sometimes the Torah just repeats things for emphasis. Probably the best example, and this is really one of the first things I had the pleasure to learn with Nechama Leibowitz when I was in Griscolo for Smicha for YU. So we spent a year in Israel, and I was in Rev Lichtenstein Shir that year, Rev Aaron Lichtenstein, and Nechama Leibowitz. So, this week's Parsha, of course, you know, 67 verses on the finding of a wife for Yitzchak. And it's repetitive, the whole story. And that's what our sages make a comment. Yafesi chatan shel avdei avod. More pleasant is the table talk, whatever, the discussion of the servants of our avot than the Torah of their children. You know, the laws of Shabbos, as the Mishnah says, as ka, Harim hatluim bisara. I love that expression. It's like mountains being held up by a hair. The laws of Shabbos is basically nothing in the Torah. Keep Shabbos. I don't know how to keep Shabbos. It's like a mountain on a hair. But the story of how to find Rivka, oh my God, 67 verses, repetitive. So some people say, no, it's repetitive, big deal. There are a lot of changes. That's like the Ibn Ezra says like that. But Nechama Leibowitz could not stand that approach. This is not our shir for today, obviously. But if you look carefully, you'll notice the changes are unbelievable. When the sages praise the servant, and remember, he's never named. You know, everybody calls him Eliezer. That may be nice, but that's not in the Chumash anywhere. It never says that. Just he's always called Eved. Whenever it refers to him by Avram, he's called Eved. Wherever it refers to him by Lavan and Metul, he's called Ish. That's in of itself a fascinating thing. Just notice. In other words, to Avram, he's an Eved. To Lavan, he's an Ish. You know, he's someone of great stature. He's never named. That's his humility, that he did his task without his personal ambition. And the rabbis say he had a daughter that he really wanted to marry, Yitzchak, but he put all aside his personal ego to carry out the mission that he had to do. And you'll notice he made a lot of changes from the instructions. One, I'll just mention one. Avram said, go back to where I came from. Whereas when the servant talks, he says, go to my family. Avram never said to go to his family. It didn't have to be someone from his family. But the Eved wanted to make it sound really cool, or coming all the way just for your family. He emphasizes the monetary aspect, how wealthy Abraham is when he's talking to Lavan. He knows who he's talking to. Anyways, there you always have to look. So there's, but you have a lot of repetition in Torah. So the mitzvah of Lav Hashem, just figure throw in a little bit on Parshat HaShavuot. The fact that the second paragraph repeats itself is not, you don't have to go crazy why that happens. Lots of things are repeated in the Torah, and lots of things are for emphasis. But of course, we mentioned last week that the first paragraph is written in the singular and the second person is written in the plural. And we discussed the whole notion. That's why learning Torah to women is from the second paragraph, because the idea that the restriction on women learning, that's a generic. It's not for everybody. There are always exceptions to the rule. It's not inherent in the woman. It's a sociological, you know, situation. So for most women, it wasn't, appropriate to learn Torah Shebal Peh, but individually that could always be. But then, so we'll see a lot of things that play out in that relationship between the individual and the our community, I think I ended this year by talking about how we are judged much differently. Individuals are judged for individual mitzvot. The community is judged for our unity, not having machloket and not talking lashon hara about one another. The individual is judged for Shabbos and kashrut and etc. But that's not at all relevant when God judges our community. And that's a very important, powerful point that individually, don't worry if somebody else keeps kosher or show. That's not your problem. You worry about that their values are good. They care about our community. They work together with our community. Yeah, it's nice. If you can get them to keep kosher too, that's also nice. But much more important are the communal, the values that unite us as a community on a communal level. The individual level, that's very much more between man and God. And whatever, we know you're not supposed to tell somebody what they're doing is wrong. An individual mitzvah, unless you think you're going to be very effective. As a matter of fact, it's forbidden. Your next door neighbor who pulls out on the car on Shabbos, you're not allowed to tell him, don't drive on Shabbos. I mean, because obviously he's not going to listen. I mean, you know, so what's the point? So the Gemara says it's forbidden to tell somebody to do something. If the guy's causing machloket, he's causing dissent in our community, that's a different story. Then that's a communal responsibility to stop such a thing. So that's it is a very different way. What I don't think I mentioned this last week. And if I did, please remind me. And if I did, and even if you don't remind me, it's always good to review. But I don't think I mentioned this aspect. Of course, this is our series is on tefillah, on prayer, on davening. So how do we know there's a mitzvah to daven? So the truth of the matter is, we've mentioned a number of times, but probably not so recently, that it's only the Rambam who says that there's a biblical mitzvah to daven. And pretty much everybody else says davening is a rabbinic mitzvah. It's kind of an amazing thought, if you think about it. There's no Torah mitzvah to daven. That's hard to accept. Rav Soloveitchik sort of dwelt upon that list, that the Rambam saved tefillah. What do you mean there's no biblical mitzvah to daven? But that's the simple reading of the Gemara. That's how, that's how most people, most of the commentaries explain. Everybody, the Rambam included, everybody agrees to daven three times a day. That's for sure. To daven all the things we daven. Davening, biblical davening is very short. It can be, the Rambam says, very, very short. 5 minutes, 2 minutes. You just have to praise God a little bit, ask for something and say thank you. That's all you got to do. Take 1 minute, 5 minutes. So, davening, but either the rabbinic source of davening, in other words, the rabbis based it on a verse, or the biblical source. Where's the source that we have to pray? What's the source? Where's the
Torah? I'm going to ask you that.
Okay, so I'm asking you.
I don't know.
Nobody knows. So it's here, right here, in Vayayim Shamoah. The pasuk says, "Lavdo b'chol avchem b'chol nafshikam." You have to worship God with all your heart. And the Gemara says, actually, I don't remember remember the exact page it is, and I'm sorry, I didn't. Not sharing my screen with that source. Hopefully,
and avodah shebelev.
Right. Ezehu avodah shebelev. It says to worship God with your heart. What's worship God of your heart? Zuhu tefillah. And this, of course, Rav Soloveitchik's famous, one of his famous examples of a mitzvah where we distinguish between what we call the ma'aseh ha-mitzvah and the kiyum ha-mitzvah. This was the action of the mitzvah and the fulfillment of the mitzvah. This essay, or whatever you want to call it, is in Al-Atshuva, which I've mentioned many times, Pinchas Peli's amazing work, a recapitulation of the Rav's, of the Tshuva drushes the Rav used to give every year of salvation between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. So he has a whole chapter, Bein Yachid v'Hatzibur, what I'm alluding to now, between the individual and the community. I think it's there where he discusses the difference between, maybe it's in a different article, but I know it's for sure in the book, where he discusses the difference between an action and a fulfillment of the mitzvah. And it's by Tshuva. In other words, the mitzvah of tshuva, the Rambam says, is to do vidu. You have to admit your sin. Ashamnu, bagadnu, al chet. But the Rav Soloveitchik says that's impossible to say that's the mitzvah. That's what he calls the maaseh ha-mitzvah. How do you do the mitzvah? You do the mitzvah by admitting your sin. But the mitzvah is to do tshuva. The mitzvah is not to say al chet. The al chet is a mechanism. It's the action you do, but it's like what we might call in English the spirit of the law and the letter of the law. It's not exactly the same. The letter of the law, what do you have to do? You have to, there's a procedure how to do tshuva, but that's not the goal. The goal is to do tshuva. So the Rav gives other examples. Probably the best example is davening. That the ma'aseh ha-mitzvah, what do you have to do? How do you daven? How do you daven? You pull up a siddur and you start saying the words. That's not davening. That's not davening. That's the action of davening. That's the ma'aseh ha-mitzvah. You don't fulfill any mitzvah that way. The mitzvah is the kiyum ha-mitzvah, the fulfillment of the mitzvah, avodah shebalev. I'm worshiping God with my heart. It's a feeling you have. The Rav explains that by simcha. There's a mitzvah to be happy on Yom Kippur. So the Talmud says, how do you be happy? For most people, you drink wine, eat meat, or you learn Torah. That's also a form of happiness. You give tzedakah. That's also a form of how we do our happiness of simcha. But those are our methods, for sure, like eating meat and drinking wine. It's not the mitzvah to drink wine. Drinking wine will help you to be in a good mood. The Torah understood that. So the ma'aseh ha-mitzvah, there it says in the Shulchan Aruch, yeah, you should drink wine, you should eat meat, yeah, fine. Hey, well, you're a vegetarian, it's a whole different story, fine. But that's not the kiyum ha-mitzvah. The kiyum ha-mitzvah is to be happy. Rachmana litzlan and aveilut, it's the same way. It's not the mitzvah to sit on a low stool and to grow a beard and to rip your clothes. The mitzvah is to be very upset and sad and mourn. But we bring you action to do it. So that's a very important idea, and it's a very hard idea, because I've mentioned many times we're so beholden to our sitter, you know, this, that, and it's not supposed to be that way. You know what? Even though I don't have it there, let me just share my screen. I'm going to show you what the Rambam says, because I think it's rather important, and I'm sure I've mentioned in the past, but you should see it inside how the Rambam defines. Let me just go here. Sorry for taking me half a second. I didn't prepare this source in advance, but I should be able to get it quickly, I hope. The Rambam, we go to Halacha. This great safari is amazing, of course. Mishnah Torah. We're going to prayer. Where are we going? Prayer and the priestly blessings. Okay, Perek Aleph. Okay. Mitzvah Asei Li Palo B'chol Yom. It's a mitzvah to daven every day. You have to worship God. And then he quotes our pasuk here, Dvarim Yud Aleph Yud Gimel. This is the second paragraph of Shema. Lavdo b'chol levavchem. Amru chachamim ezuhu avodah shebalev. What's worship of the heart? Amru chachamim. So most people assume Amru chachamim means it's a rabbinic mitzvah. The Rambam is saying the rabbis are interpreting what the Bible meant. And the other commentaries say, okay, based on this verse, the rabbis instituted the notion of tefillah. But that's, whether it's rabbinic or biblical, we follow the mitzvah anyway. But it's just kind of a fascinating thing to think that many people think it's only a rabbinic mitzvah. Ve'en minyan mitzvah tefillah min ha-Torah. How often you daven? It's up to you. 1, 10, 5, doesn't matter. Ve'en mishnah tefillah zot min ha-Torah. And the form of the tefillah. We'd say, Ve'ein the tefillah z'man kavua, you can daven whenever you want. You pray, it doesn't matter. The fichach nashim v'avadim, woman, everybody's obligated to daven. It's mitzvah to say shaloh z'man grama. It's not dependent on time. The rabbi said you should daven at this time, but that's not the mitzvah. What's the mitzvah? She'ed ha-mitchanein, you have to beseech God. You have to give his praise and say thank you, magid shivcho, v'chozer, b'shu'ol t'rachav, you ask your needs, and bakashat chinah, and then you give hoda'ah. That's the shevach bakasha b'hoda'ah, the three parts of the tefillah. Okay. If you are good, you're a good poet and you know what to say, imaya ragil marbeh, you do a lot. You daven for a long time, many tefillot. Imaya rel svatayim, like it's interesting. That's, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu. If you're, however you want to translate, rel svatayim, not a great orator. You're not good at speech. So you do whatever you can, whenever you're able to say a few words. Anybody according to their need. There's some people who pray once a day. Some people daven a lot. But you have to face the Beit HaMikdash. Rabbi Soloveitchik, the Rav, felt this is a biblical law. I believe Rabbi Ganach, when he built the shul, that's a story I heard in Englewood. When I came to New York to YU, the YU original base measures faced north, I think, did not face east. Came to New York, a lot of shuls didn't face east. So we as Canadians would joke, you know, New Yorkers feel that the whole world, you know, the famous, you know, poster of Fifth Avenue, you know, and not 80% of the world is between like Fifth Avenue and the Hudson River and, you know, the Atlantic Ocean, the rest of, you know, that famous New Yorker poster. So, you know, New Yorkers, they don't have to dub into Israel. Okay. That's as young kids. We said that, but it's true. Architecturally, it's hard. Space in New York. So often they couldn't make it going east. But Rav Soloveitchik was very makbid, even though the YU base measures wasn't east. I think the new one is, but the old one wasn't east. And I believe that the Rav told Rabbi Ganach to rebuild the shul. They were in the middle of construction. The architect had built the plans. It wasn't faced east. The Rav said, no, you got to, whatever it's going to cost, tell the architect to redo the plans and face east. The notice how the Rambam puts it in, like, right away. Like, daven a lot and out of the blue. Like, I wouldn't think that's the most important thing. But yes, you have to daven facing the Beit HaMikdash. And that's how it was until Ezra. Everybody daven when they wanted, how they wanted, as much they wanted. But when the Jewish people were exiled, 586 BCE, Nebuchadnezzar, and they got mixed up, they were Persians and Greece, Paras, Yavan, and Sharamot, and they had children, you know, and then born outside of Israel, and they spoke, you know, Yinglish. They didn't speak any language properly. They need balbalu svatam. You know, language. I'm not a linguist, but we know language is many things mixed into it. And nobody knew how to speak Hebrew properly. Nobody could fully express themselves. Very interesting in one language. I don't know. It's a very hard to imagine what they couldn't speak Persian, perfect, like fluent Persian. I don't really know what he means. But that's what the Rambam says. They was mixed in. Like, I guess you say English, God's word from Latin, God's word from Greece, maybe that. I don't know what he means. But something along those lines. Bishibush, it was all mixed up. They spoke Chatsimi de Bereshtotitza. Half of them spoke this language, and this one couldn't communicate with him. There are 25 Chinese dialects. The French, you know, people tell you that the French in Quebec is not like the same as the French in France. Okay. So nobody knew how to daven. And then came in Shara Ezra, Beit Dino, and Ezra and his court, this is the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, that's what we assume. Ezra's the founder of the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah. They established Shmona Esrei. Okay, here's what you do. Say three at the beginning, three at the end, and in the middle, you're going to ask for wealth and wisdom and forgiveness and repentance and all these other things. So what you see from this Rambam is that really the Siddur is, I don't say the Siddur is a bad thing, chas v'shalom, but there's a certain negativity about the Siddur. Ideal prayer. You see, once you tell people what to say, it's no longer in the heart. We're focused on the mouth. We just have to read the words. And that's what I mean. That's not what prayer is about. That's, the Rambam is very clear. It was an unfortunate historical circumstance that led to the establishment of the Siddur because we had no choice. Yes, if we tell people just pray, I wouldn't know what to say. We need it, but you have to, there's sort of a tension between Avodah Shebalev and a Siddur. And we have to just be aware of that tension and try to reconcile it to the best we can. And that's why I often say, I know, and in schools, they don't do this. In shuls, they don't do this, especially probably because of reform. And, you know, it'd be like, you're reform if you do that. You don't have to say every word in the Siddur. It's okay. Say a fifth of the Siddur every day and say it five times as intently. The problem is, of course, if we made it shorter, people would do so that they wouldn't do the rest of the part with more kavana. They would just, you know, daven a lot quicker. That's always the problem. But I think in schools, there's a real opportunity, especially younger kids, to daven much less, to rotate the davening and to daven the same amount of time, but just with much more understanding. And then if the kid in grade 1 and 2 and 3 and 4 goes through the tefillah like that, like I said, he'll know it off by heart because he'll do a small amount. You'll say the whole thing out loud. Like in the Sephardic community, he'll understand what he's saying and they'll grow up to daven a lot better than often we do. Anyways, so that's, but the idea to pray comes from our, according to the Rambam, comes from our verse in the Shema, to worship God with our heart. And that's how to worship God. The siddur is a mechanism to get our hearts working, but the siddur is not the be-all and end-all of our tefillah. That's very clear. Okay, now back to why am I talking about this? I guess it's interesting, but why now? Because the individual and our community. So it's interesting. I'm going to go with the theme. We're going to explain a few things on the theme that the second paragraph of Shema is talking about our communal mitzvot. That's how Rashi says. The first paragraph is the individuals. The second paragraph, Bayam Shemoa, but the repetition is to our community. So this to me, I don't know, maybe I'm taking it too far, but this to me is an allusion to the Ramban's view. We've mentioned many, many times because I think it's so important and so beautiful and so hard. The Ramban's view, who disagrees with the Rambam. The Rambam writes, it's the fifth mitzvah. You know, the Rambam wrote the 613 mitzvot. He listed them all. I've mentioned, you know, we don't have an agreed upon list. No two rabbis agree because the Talmud never establishes it. There's a whole debate whether it's really true. There's 613 mitzvot for another time. But, so the Rambam is his introduction to the Mishnah Torah. The Rambam's Mishnah Torah that I just quoted from the Laws of Prayer, there is really an explication of the 613 mitzvot. That's what the Rambam does. So in every section, he tells you how many mitzvot there are in every section. Because what the Rambam is doing in the Mishnah Torah is telling you what the 613 mitzvot, telling you all the laws. So he first wrote a book to tell you what are the 613 mitzvot. And he had a big problem because we have 5 million mitzvot. 613 mitzvot. And got 5,000 mitzvot. In Shabbos, there are 39 melachot. Aren't those 39 mitzvot? No, the Rambam says it's only one mitzvah, not to do melach. It's 39 details of one mitzvah. So the Rambam had to figure out, and there's you can spend the next 25 years reading essays and articles and scholarship and learning about the Rambam's Sefer HaMitzvot. It's you look Sefer HaMitzvot. I'm not at home. I can't pull it out, but you know a little bit and the commentaries on the side and how we figured out. So the Ramban is one of the most famous commentaries on the Rambam. So the Rambam, and then there's a whole theory, the order of the Rambam. The Sefer HaChinuch just goes to Parshat HaShavua. He does the same 613 as the Rambam. Sefer HaChinuch just followed the Rambam. But he put it to the Parsha of the Week, you know, but the Rambam doesn't do that. The Rambam, he made up a whole system. It's not, the first ones we discussed is, I think a while ago. The first ones are easy. Belief in God. There's one God. God is unified. You have to love God. I think those are the first four. Number five is you have to pray to God. So pretty important. You can see already. And then it's how the Rambam figures out. So mitzvah number five in the Rambam is you have to pray. You have to daven. And the Ramban, it's interesting. The Ramban says, no, it's not a mitzvah. So we said it's not a mitzvah. It's a gemilut chesed. It's an act of kindness that God allows us to pray. It's such a beautiful Ramban. That's why I repeat it all the time. Can you imagine if we took prayer? It's hard. Prayer's a burden. I went to this morning, 6:45 million. You got to get up early. Like, you know, it's hard. You're not, it's not always so easy to be inspired. But the Ramban says it's an act of kindness that God allows us to approach him in prayer. But the Ramban has the one exception. The Ramban has the one exception that in an eight saran, a time of need, like we are now, unfortunately, tefillah becomes a biblical mitzvah with a minyan, with a minyan. That because you have to gather the people. But here, look, let me quickly, I think I have it open. If not, get it open. Right, this is the Parshiot in Baalotcha. Where are we here? I can't see it. Maybe I don't have it here. Oh, here's positive mitzvah. This is what I was talking about before. Here on Safari, they don't have the whole thing, but number five, you see the five here? This is the Rambam Sefer Mitzvot, the short version, Li Palelo. After Tavan Vavarta Mashem Avoda Shabalei, if you heard their quote, okay. Then you have to cling to God is number six. You have to swear in his name. All the first ones are about a relationship to God. You have to sanctify his name. Then you have to read Shema. It's interesting how the Rambam does it. But, anyways, okay, we won't do that now here. If you go here to Dvarim, not Dvarim, what am I doing? But Midbar 10. Why is this not opening? I don't know why it's not opening. Numbers 10. Shtei Chatzotrot, it's like sort of like our shofar. Okay, didn't you? This Chatzot and the shofar went together. The Chatzot are not shofar, but they're always blowing together. And we learn parts of Hilchot Shofar from here. Do Katem Trua, blow the Trua, right? And when you gather the people, when you gather the people, you do a Tekiah. because you're confident. The true as you're fearful. It's a broken sound. It's crying. When the nation comes together, tekiah, confident, proud sign, unbroken sign. The trua is when things are not so good. That's why we surround the shvarim and the trua, which are forms of crying, the Gemara says, with the tekiah, which is the sign of confidence. So God forbid when there's a war in your country, v'haraitam, again, it's a trua, v'chatzotrof, v'nizkartem lifnei Hashem, and you should be remembered before God. So this, the Ramban says, this is the mitzvah to pray with a minyan, because you're gathered together. The nation has to come together. And then, of course, in our joyous occasions, etc. So the Ramban, basically, normally you don't have to daven, but in an Eitz Hara you have to daven, and you have to daven with the minyan. So I just find it interesting. We learned it from the second paragraph of the Shema, which is talking about our community. I'm stretching it a little bit, but the point is true that the source of Tfilah, that the Rambam quotes this and one other source, B'chol Levavchem, is a communal source, because prayer is really, ideally, prayer is with the minyan, and I've meant many, many times not to answer Baruch Hu and Kedusha. Those are our bonus. The reason we daven with a minyan is because God hears our tefillot more with the minyan. Because we as individuals are nobodies. We as a community are everything. The Jewish people are eternal individuals. We sin, we're sinners, but Klal Yisrael, and that's always our claim. And that's part of the Rav's famous essay when we do tshuva, mentioned before, says the bidui, the al-chait that the individual says on Yom Kippur is at the end of our tefillah. We don't have the chutzpah in the middle of our tefillah to ask God to forgive us. Who are we to ask God to forgive us? Are you crazy? As sinners that we are, the Lashon Hara, everything we do. So after we finish davening, I finished davening, you know what? I better mention it. I have no choice. Otherwise, I'm finished. So after we say, we sort of approach God. That's why the chazan begins on Rosh Hashanah from the back of the room, Hamelech, very quietly, and then he gets, because he's nervous. Who am I to approach God? The king of the universe, Hamelech, that's what we start on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. So the chazan's at the back of the shul, he's too nervous. I have no right to approach God. Okay, we have no choice, so we do it. Our community comes together. So the individual says tshuva al-chait way at the end. The tzibur, it's right in the middle, in Chazaret, Shots in the bracha of Kedushat Hayom. We say right in the middle because we're very confident and we sing. That's the Rav Sullivan. Shamnu. That's a very happy tune. We're very excited because God is going to forgive us as a community. So when we come together, the real mitzvah of prayer, not to answer Kedusha, is to daven Shmona Esrei silently so you can still have the heart, right? That's why we daven Shmona Esrei silently, because don't be beholden to the sitter. So the rabbis say you have to say all these themes. Okay, so you have to talk about wisdom and wealth and health and peace and justice. Beautiful. But add your own stuff. Don't be beholden to the words of the sitter. I know that sounds radical, but that's what real tefillah is. And that's why Jewish people have said, halacha says, you're not allowed to daven the Shmona Esrei out loud, because everybody has the opportunity to privately. So that's where we have the tension plays out, or that's where we give the individual a chance to do a Avodah Shebalev within the fixed structure of the Shmona Esrei. We do it privately, so you'll have an opportunity to express your own personal needs and wants. Okay, that's one thing. That's tefillah from the second paragraph. Now, the main theme, of course, of the second paragraph is reward and punishment. That's Vayayim Shamo. The first paragraph, nothing reward. You should love God and you should worship God and you should teach Torah to your children and have a mezuzah in your house. And wherever you go, you should be talking in Torah. Beautiful. It's very beautiful, but there's no reward and punishment. Oh, Vayayim Shamo. If you listen, it's going to be great. Hishamru lachem. Be very careful, because if you don't listen, you guys are finished. And again, it's talking to our community. You'll be exiled. That's not an individual punishment. You know, that's a communal punishment. So it's very interesting. I just saw, and it's reminded me of a second commentary. In other words, what the second parsha, this was in the Siddur Otzer Tfilot that we mentioned last week. I mentioned all the time. I've actually tried very briefly, and I have to spend more time, a little bit more research on the development of that Siddur. But anyway, so in the Siddur Otzer HaTfilot, he quotes, why are the mitzvot all repeated, right? How we started our shir. So many of the mitzvot, half of the second paragraph is the first paragraph. So he also develops this theme that the individual and our community, but what he says in a very interesting way, he says what the Torah wants is the Torah wants that we have to do our mitzvot b'tzibur. In other words, he specifically mentions Torah, basically Torah, Voda, Ugimul, Chasadim have to be done b'tzibur. It's not enough to learn Torah on your own. You have to teach Torah. You have to spread Torah. It's not your Torah. It's not enough even the worship about your own avoda, to just how you're going to be like. You should worship of how our community can relate to God. Don't sit in your Dalit Amud in the corner and forget everybody else. The Rav Soloveitchik develops that at great length. And what I was talking about, you know, in Al HaTshuva, Bein HaTzibur LiYachid, it's quite powerful how, you know, the devout, deeply devoted religious person who ignores society, that's very bad. Really, he's not really part of Kaddish. It's very harsh. The Rav is actually quite harsh. It's basically, Ibn Ezra says it, Ulay yesh chamishim tzadikim last week, betoch ha'ir, in the midst of the city. If they're sitting in the kolel and totally divorced from the city, then who cares? They have no influence on Stom. But if there are 10, even 10 people in the middle of Wall Street, who are showing to be righteous people as they make investment deals or they learn Torah at lunch or stuff, you know, whatever they do, that influences the whole city. Then they can save the whole city. It's got to be betoch ha'ir. Because the Rambam says, here, I'll show you this Rambam. It's, listen, I'm doing all this stuff. I didn't, don't have it here. Give me a second. It's really an amazing Rambam. And that's what the Siddur Otzer Tefillot develops this theme. So let's just go here. Let's go, what did I say I wanted to do? Hold on. What Rambam did I want to look up? Now I forget. Hold on. Oh, yeah. In Hilchot Teshuva. Okay. That's where the Rambam is. Okay. Just let me take a quick look. It's rather amazing. I'm sure some of you may, probably you've learned Hilchot Teshuva. So you'll see repentance. So the Rambam lists the 24 people who lose their share in the world to come. The Rambam has a whole list and people who lose their share in the world to come. And the Rambam here is discussing, I think it's in chapter 3, it might be chapter 4, but I'm pretty sure it's chapter 3. Okay, so these are the people who lose their share in the world to come. Now, Kofrim, Parhesia, whatever, we don't have this, not the time to go through it. Okay. Very interesting. Someone who separates himself from the community is one of the people who has no share in the world to come. Now, that's very nice. What does it mean? So the Rambam lists them off, and then he explains who are meaning, who are apikorsim. Okay, very nice. And then the Rambam keeps going, and the Rambam says, Machtiye Rambim, haporish mitarchi tzibur. Alfal pi shalo avar veirot. He's very quiet. He doesn't sin. But he sits in the corner. He doesn't participate in Jewish people. Veinose mitzvah bichlalam. He doesn't do mitzvah with everybody else. They have their own little place. The problems of the Jewish people are not my problems. Our community is wonderful. I can't worry about the 75% intermarriage rate in the Jewish world. That's not my problem. It's their problem. He doesn't fast when they're fasting. It's like he's not even part of our community. I don't know what that's a ain lo chelech lolam haba. See, there the Rambam is saying like he's acting almost like a non-Jew, but the Rav developed this in this notion of he was really, it seems pretty obvious, talking about communities where people are very religious, but they're not concerned about the rest of the community. And the Rambam says it. So that's poreich midarchi tzibur. The Rambam says you lose your share in the world to come. This is like powerful. Now I know the Rambam's very controversial. You know, the Rambam does never mince his words. And listen, the Rambam held that taking money to learn Torah or even to teach Torah, you lose your share in the world to come. And we know we're not, the Rav Moshe says you're not allowed to follow that Rambam. It's a different world today, but okay. But it's important note. So the Otzer Tfilat Siddur says that the second paragraph of Shema is telling us we have to do the mitzvot b'tzibur. I don't exactly, so again, you have to teach Torah to everybody. have to be worried about our community. Do gemilut chesed, not just to your own community, to everybody else. So in other words, that's why the mitzvot are repeated. Even the way, I don't know, our mezuzah tefillah, I don't exactly know how you do that bitzibur as opposed to biyachid, but the idea that the mitzvot have a communal aspect. It's not just you doing the mitzvot, it's your doing. Listen, you want to call it the call to kiruv, whatever you want to call it. You know, it's, but that's where dividing the mitzvot are different than when you daven at home, you daven mitzibur or the whatever. It's a different type of mitzvot. Okay. Any questions, comments? You don't have to, if you don't like what I'm saying, let me know. You don't agree. Okay. Now, that's just, sure, Zev, yes.
How do you interpret this? Ishavrochem beyitel alavchem. And then he says, if you don't, if you have other gods, I will kick you out of the land. What measurement does he take? Like, is it majority or anyone? Because look what happened in Sodom.
That's a very good question. Okay, let's wait probably till next week, please, God.
Yeah,
okay,
but look what happened in Sodom. He doesn't punish the Rishayim, even if there's 10 righteous.
Right. So first of all, there's a big machloket. What exactly was Avram praying for in Sodom? It's a little bit of the standard, and I think most commentaries assume that God was going to, at least for sure, that's how Avram understood it. God was going to kill everybody. The righteous were going to die because of the majority not righteous. So Avram says, you're going to kill the righteous with the, that's not fair. Maybe there are 50 people in the city. Now, who's Avram praying for? Is Avram praying to save the 50 people because God was going to wipe out everybody? No, some say that. There are some who say that. Some of the commentaries, the Torah is ambiguous always, and it's so some commentaries say, of course, God, Avram didn't care, wipe out Sodom. They're evil people, right? That's not the way the way it's normally understood. That's the way most understand it. But some understand it that Avram was just praying to save the righteous, and because they were going to kill. Now, some say God had zero intention to kill the righteous. Obviously, he was never going to kill the righteous. The whole debate was about saving the wicked. And some say God was going to kill everybody. And the whole debate was the 10, 20, 30, but people should save everybody. So it's kind of interesting. But there is a notion, yes, that it does, that we are responsible one for another. It's a hanistarot l'ashem elokeinu v'aniglot. It's such a beautiful naming. Lanu v'aneinu adolam. That's Parsha Nitzavim. Hanistarot l'ashem elokeinu. The hidden sins are for God. Haniglot. We see people causing dissension in our community, causing machloket, and you do not, we see sin and you do nothing about it. You're responsible. The kashlu ish bavona achiv. I forget what that pasuk is in the Torah. We fail. We are punished for the sins of our brethren. How far do you carry that? How does that apply in a modern society? Of course, it's a totally different equation, like, you know, where our whole attitude towards non-observance. That's what I was saying at the beginning. I see somebody wrote a comment. What'd you say? That is American perspective. I think you're talking about not to mix in on the personal mitzvot. Back in the day in Europe, that type of didn't work. Yeah. So I think that's just incorrect. I mean, it's correct, but it's incorrect. In other words, there was a time in 500 years ago, in time of the Gemara, when you were Machalos Shabbos, you were making a statement that I have nothing to do with Judaism. I hate Judaism. I don't believe in God. And that's why I'm a Machal Shabbos. And therefore, if the Gemara says you're considered like an idol worshiper, and you don't count towards a minyan. Today, that's ridiculous. I said, what are you, nuts? Nobody's normal says that. The Binyan Sion changed Jewish history. He was the first one, the first great Gadol B'Torah, Rav Yaakov Ettlinger. In 1861, writes one of them, I think the three most important tshuvas of the last 500 years, where he says our whole attitude towards non-religious Jews has to change. Because he says, what are you talking about? They go to shul on Shabbos and then they go to work. What we would call, in 1861, they weren't driving. But the person, they drive to shul. So what are you going to tell me? He doesn't believe in God. He doesn't care about our community. He hates Judaism. That's ridiculous. Or as Rav Lichtenstein said, what, you're going to tell somebody in Albuquerque, in Dallas, not to drive to shul? Obviously, you want them to drive to shul. Where should they drive to? At the golf course? That's ridiculous. So our whole attitude has changed because sinning is different today. And even I believe, from what I understand, the non-observant Jews don't even like the term Tinok Shenishpa. You know, that used to be common. They're Tinok Shenishpa. It's not their fault. There are children taken captive. They brought up not religious. Nebuch They don't know, and we have to teach them. They don't like that. A lot of Jews are, no, I'm not Nebuch. I'm a Reformed Jew on principle. I'm not a Nebuch. I'm not a Tinoch Shenishba. I know exactly what I'm doing. So I don't have to agree with them, but I'm not going to denigrate them. Just if anybody listens, you know, I started a new podcast, you know, on the Parsha. Maybe you can listen. You don't have to listen. It's 8-9 minutes. So, that's what I spoke about a little bit this week. You know, denigrate. We live in a different society. The Chazon Ish, not a modern Orthodox rabbi. The Chazon Ish, the founder of Haredi Judaism in Israel, if you want to say that. Although it's gone more to extreme than when he was, but anyways, he dies in 1953. The Chazon Ish says even a Jew who grows up in a religious home, who has a yeshiva education, who becomes not religious, we don't attach all these negative comments on the Gemara to such a person, because we live in a society where being not religious is normal. We don't have any miracles anymore. We don't have any, and it's just normal. We live in a secular society. So even a yeshiva educated kid, yeah, a lot of them are going to become not religious, and we shouldn't throw the book at them like they're terrible people. The same way, would anybody sit Shiva for someone who intermarried, their kid who intermarried? That would be terrible. Awful. I mean, maybe in Satmar that makes sense. Okay, I understand. But in a normal family, that would be terrible. Mark Shapiro has mentioned to me, I don't know if it's in print, but he's told me more than once, somebody approached the Sri Deish, that's what he did, his doctorate on, Rabbi Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg, one of the great, great poskim of, you know, dies in the 60s, survived the war, the Eloy, you know, the head of the Hildesheimer Rabbinical Seminary, Eloy in Slobodka, and his son was intermarried. What should he do? So the Sri Deish told him, you go to the wedding. Wow, you go to the wedding. It's like a whole different world, because society is totally different. So rather than saying, yeah, so you're right. And I think, unfortunately, today we have a lot of Jews who take this European attitude. Oh, he's a sinner, a kaifer, terrible. The Reform are terrible. We're going to hate them. No, you know, halavai, we should have more Reformed Jews. I know that's not a popular thing to say. But as opposed to what, a Jew who does nothing, who's on the beach on Rosh Hashanah? Where do I want a Jew on Rosh Hashanah? At the beach in Tel Aviv or in a Reform shul? There's no shaila where he should be. I know that's not what people are taught necessarily. I think that's, I don't know, maybe, what can I tell you? What can I tell you? I think what I'm saying is totally rooted, at least in the thought of like all the, you know, the poskim I look up to. Even Rav Soloveitchik, see, that's the problem, because in the 50s, Rabbi Soloveitchik had his famous comment that is totally taken out of context and totally misquoted, that it's better to stay at home than to go to a conservative shul on Rosh Hashanah without the mechitza. That's the famous thing the Rav said. So it's true. The Rav said it, first of all, but that's why Rav Lichtenstein is correcting him. He's saying, today, of course I would tell a Jew to drive to shul in Albuquerque or Dallas. The Rav was talking to his nephew, Moshe Meiselman, who's now the Rosh Hashiva in Torah Moshe. I believe that's who he was talking to. And he was telling his nephew in the 50s, in the height of the war between the conservative reform movement, which is different today, totally, then in his particular situation, he should better daven at home. But the Rav would never tell a conservative Jew, stay at home and don't go to a conservative shul. The Rav wasn't stupid. He understood. His best friend almost was Rabbi Shubo. Read the letters he wrote. Read how he praises this left-wing conservative rabbi. It was his best friend in Boston. They were super close. And the Rav writes how amazing he is for his community and for the Jewish community. The Rav is saying, for an Orthodox Jew, it's better to daven. Okay, Beseder, fine. You can argue with that too, by the way. People today don't argue with that, but you shouldn't hear shofar in a conservative shul if you have no choice. But I think in the historical context, the Rav was saying it in the time when the reform, you know, when that was a huge issue, where Orthodox shul after Orthodox shul was becoming conservative. So the Rav laid the line in the sand. No mechitza, you're out of here. But the Rav understood that the Rav said you can join Synagogue Council of America, or Orthodox rabbis should work with Reform rabbis, just not on theological issues. We differ theologically, Beseder, but we're Jews together. We work together. That's the misa. They quote one sentence out of the Rav and apply it there. It's ridiculous. I'm sorry. I don't mean to be so strong, but I think it is very important to Klai Israel. I've spoken to this in many contexts. Morris, you want to say something?
Yeah, you mentioned Rabbi Meiselman, and given the Rambam you just read, Rav Meiselman, I read on the website, gave a psak to the Haredi community not to say the tefillah of Shlom
HaChayalim. I don't want to go there. Exactly. I'll tell you something from before now. Now I think it's too, you know, we're binyanim. Halavai should pass, but I heard Rabbi Riskin with my, I don't know what he says, and I told, they are saying Tehillim even in many Haredi yeshivas. I don't want to, this is going to shake up, I mean, it's shaking up the whole Jewish world. I mean, everybody, what's going to be, who knows? I was talking to a good friend of mine yesterday in Israel. He's a political analyst and a firm guy and very interesting. I mean, he says the day the war ends, he will be with 1 million people on the street demanding the entire government resign. And the elections, he's on the right. He's more to the right than I am politically, whatever. And he says there's going to be total shakeup, but it depends what happens. It depends what the, nobody knows what the conclusion is going to be. But the Haredi world is going to perhaps undergo a great change because of this, or at least parts of the Haredi world. So I don't know, but Rabbi Riskin, I heard it from Rabbi Riskin many years ago, said he asked Rav Nathan Zvi Finkel, I don't know the first name, the one, you know, the Rosh Hashiva in Mir with the Finkel family, but the more recent, he passed away a number of years ago. The more recent Rosh Hashiva was, he went to Ida Crown in Chicago. He was, you know, a descendant. He went at a modern Orthodox, and he lived in Chicago. Ida Crown is like a very modern, it's like Ramaz or Frisch, I don't know, S-A-R, sort of in that world. I don't exactly know. But that's the school he went to, and he was on the, I know he spoke to Americans, said, who played on their basketball team? And then he raised his hand, you know, he has a long white beard, you know, Haredi looking, you know, and he said, yeah, I played on the basketball team at Ida Crown Jewish Academy, you know, in Chicago. And then he went to Israel, and he became very learned, and, you know, he moved hashkafically. And so I think Rabbi Riskin spoke to him once. So why don't you say Tfilah L'Shalom HaMedina? Like, you know, someone who grew up, you understand. He said, you know, he can't do it for Tzahal, because if he says for Tzahal, it could be somebody's going to, if I remember correctly, maybe it's a little thing, you know, but I remember, I can't do it. I agree it should be done, but I'm nervous that somebody's going to, people are going to become too close to the army, and maybe someone will leave the yeshiva and join the army. I don't know. So my understanding is they say their own tefillot, but they have difficulty saying tefillot and made up by the rabbinate. Whatever. Obviously, we don't agree with that, but I don't want to criticize. If they're saying their tefillot and whatever, it's hard. It's the most important thing is to get a lot of machloket. The same way I think Reform Judaism, there's much positive values and tremendous things, even though I don't agree with their hashkaf. But the same thing in the Haredi world, they have many wonderful, fantastic things we can learn from. Yes, I don't like some of the things they do. What can I tell you? But now, God forbid, to move down all community. We'll see what happens. We should do what we can to unite Klal Yisrael. I don't know what to say. I don't know if that answers the question.
Well, I have a question.
Yeah, Marty, what do you want to ask?
It changed the subject.
Good to change your subject. Yeah, good.
You talked about davening with a minion.
Uh-huh, yeah.
I stopped to walk right before COVID.
Uh-huh.
And before I used to walk, I went to show every morning. My question is from the idea that you should question is there any value for me from a halachic or hashgafic point of view to daven with Zoom during the week?
So it's very interesting. I was in Riverdale last night. My son was in Riverdale. I haven't been to Riverdale for Shabbos in at least 38 years. And there was, for some of us, we're going to be Shabbos there. So we stopped last night. So this morning I went to Dublin at, I said, at the 6:45 minion at the Hebrew Institute of Riverdale. So that's Rabbi Avi Weiss, Yeshua. I mean, originally, so I've never been there. I mean, I think I was in the building once. I went in and I see they have a minion, 35 people, whatever. And then, there's the guy in front of me is on his computer, and there are a bunch of people on Zoom who were saying Kaddish and what, or davening, whatever, but some of them were also saying Kaddish with the people in the shul. There were one or two people in the shul saying Kaddish. And then I tell me they have a 750. They don't call it a minyan. It was very interesting. Just this morning, I was a little bit kind of surprised. They still have a 750. They said it's not a minyan, but our second minyan, our second tefillah is at 750 only on Zoom. In other words, it's not in person. The in-person minions is 6:45, 7:50 is on Zoom. I said, wow, that's really interesting. Yeah, they're committed to it. I guess there are people coming. I just found it very fascinating. Is there, you know, a room? I think I discussed last week. It killed the conservative movement. They made the fatal mistake of broadcasting Zoom on Shabbos. That means nobody has to go to shul anymore. That, at the time, it made a lot of sense. And I remember at the time, I don't want to quote who he is, but it's somebody who teaches often for Torah Notion. You all know him, but I'm not going to quote his name. Although he probably wouldn't mind. But, I remember at the beginning of COVID, he said that, of course, you know, you ask a rav, can you use Zoom on Shabbos and, you know, all this stuff? Of course, the answer is no. But a gadol of Yisrael would tell you the answer is yes. If we had really good, real gadolim, the gadol would understand the importance of community, even by Zoom. So I don't know. I think maybe now that's not so true. It was true maybe for a while, but the problem is once the conservative movement started, they can't put the genie back in the bottle. I don't know. I think there is something to it. Yes. It's, you know, learning Torah and Zoom. We didn't have so much Torah and Zoom before this. It's a community, but it's not the same thing. It's not the same thing as being in person. I remember right when Zoom, right as the pandemic was sort of ending. It's not, I don't know if it ever totally ends.
I live in a building with stairs. Okay. Okay. Last week I went in a car for the first time in about 4 months, you know. So my point is, my question is, if you have the option.
Right. If you have the option, I don't think Zoom, I think it's better, you know, to dumb it in person. It's everything is better. You know, Zoom has many wonderful advantages, whatever, but people like camaraderie, like it's not the same. Like it was interesting. I had Jonathan Ziering, Rabbi Jonathan Ziering, he spoke for us, a young, really amazing Talmud Chacham, young in his early 30s, an Eloi. And so he gave a shiur. There's a halacha, if you haven't seen a friend for a month or for a year, you make a special bracha. That's a question how we apply it today, especially in ancient times. You didn't know if they were alive. You just haven't seen someone in a year. You're so happy to see your friend. You say, a shechayanu or machaye meitim even on times, if I'm not mistaken, I think sometimes, a shechayanu. So the question he was discussing, if you saw somebody on Zoom, does that count? And he said, like, what's a bracha? There was a whole shear that we see Zoom is not the same. People were excited to go back to shul. Many people. People want kiddush. They want this socialization. Zoom is fantastic. We wouldn't have the shiur without Zoom. Thank you very much for all coming. But if I gave the shiur in Toronto at Friday morning 9:15, so Morris maybe would come. He lives two blocks from me. Zeb, I don't know if Zeb would come. I mean, I can list off all the Torontonians online. Like, you know, it's it's phenomenal, but you need both. I think you need both. And I think it's nice for people who can't come to shul. I think it's tremendous for older people. It's hard to get out. Yes, but the shul can conduct. There's a minyan going on in shul being watched Zoom. I think that's an amazing thing. I think that is beautiful. And I think that should keep. What to do on Shabbos? Okay, that's a different question. I don't have to tell you in 2020, if you remember, Rav Schachter gave some very lenient psakim in terms of calling people. Remember that first Pesach of 2020 was a 3-day yontif. It was mamish like 6 weeks after, 5 weeks after the world turned upside down. People were you were nervous to go within 100 feet of some. People were dying left and right. You know, what to do that first Pesach. So no, everybody had to stay there alone. You remember, you know, it's a long time ago, but, so people don't want to remember that. They have the starim alone. What do? You have your elderly parents, 85 years old. Who knows if they're well? So you can keep Zoom on. Rav Schachter, all these, you know, the psakim, how to deal with it. Yeah, it's a little bit of pikuach nefesh. You know, we're very machmir in pikuach nefesh, you know. So anyways, but okay, let's just, it's already 10. I didn't even cover like 10%, well, maybe 10% what I wanted to do, but okay. Baruch Hashem, that's good. I hope so. We do, you know, we do account. But let me at least raise the issue that I wanted to focus on today, and we'll pick it up next week. Is the, I said the second paragraph is on reward and punishment. If you keep the mitzvot, so yes, you asked that before. Yes, there is an idea that especially in communal punishment that the righteous will suffer with the wicked. You know, when the exile, it, yes, the righteous people will be exiled with the non-righteous people. You know, if the righteous people died, the Holocaust, you know, all these things, whatever you, again, I want to get, I'm not saying the Holocaust is a punishment, but we understand when bad things happen, we don't distinguish between the righteous and the non-righteous. That's just the way the world works. So, and the Torah does place some responsibility, especially on the leaders. Listen, Egla Arufa, the whole law of Egla Arufa is that the elders of the city are responsible when somebody's killed in the city. What do they do? Is it possible to believe, right? They have to say, we didn't kill this person. The famous quote of the rabbis. What, are you crazy? Do you actually think the rabbis murdered somebody? No, but you know what? They didn't have enough. They didn't escort him to his hotel room. How do you let somebody walk on the street? They didn't. They gave him enough food. They didn't welcome him to us. It's an amazing level of responsibility. To be a leader of the Jewish people is a real high level of responsibility. And yes, so we punished. And Ari Miklat and the we wait for the guy until the Kohen Gadol dies. What did the Kohen Gadol do? It's a punishment. He's a leader. The leaders have to create a society where things can't happen. Where mistake, you have to create a society where there are no car accidents. Ari Miklat is it's an accident, right? So no, what do you mean an accident? There are no accidents. Every accident is negligence. It's just the lower level of negligence, right? So you have to create a society where people drive, they keep one car distance for every 10 miles an hour, like they teach you when you're driving, you know, 2 seconds on the highway between the car, right? And you have to keep the speed low. Okay, there won't be any car accidents. So that's the responsibility of the leader. So if the Kohen Gadol, the spiritual leader, if somebody died accidentally, they're going to go to the army and they're going to daven for the Kohen Gadol to die. That's what it says. Of course they're going to daven for the Kohen. You're normal. You're in jail. You can't leave the Aron Miklat. You're in jail. You want to get out. So you're going to pray the Kohen Gadol should die. How do I know people pray that? Because it says in the Mishnah that the mothers of the Kohen Gadol would bake cake. It's such a beautiful, such an amazing thing. The mothers of the Kohen Gadol would bake cakes to give to all the people in the Aron Miklat. Don't pray for my son to die because you won't get this great food. Like, I'm a great cook and every week you get fresh.
Another thing with that also, when Aaron was Nifter, it says Vayivku Kol Beis Yisrael. And the question is, why Kol? Because everybody, and what did they prove from that? They prove from that there was no murder b'shogeg in that generation, so nobody was praying for the Kohen Gadol to die, and everyone was happy.
I get it here. Interesting. Is that a medrash somewhere? I know Aaron was more beloved. He was an Oev Shalom, a Rode Shalom.
They bring that as proof that there was no Ritzicha B'Shogeg then, because there was no one praying for him to die. Uh-huh. Everyone mourned his death.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Very good. Okay. Thank you. Okay. So what the subject will start with next week, will be what kind of rewards the Torah will give. It's going to rain. I don't know that we consider that such a great reward, but it's going to rain. What happened to the spiritual reward for it? But we'll pick up on this theme and hopefully a lot more. Next week we'll develop this whole idea that, reward and punishment. That's the key of the second paragraph. And Zev, hopefully I will get to discuss your question a little bit more about, being thrown off on the land, etc. Okay. All right. So let's quickly just review what we discussed. We end up discussing a lot about prayer. Prayer is only according to the Rambam is prayer a biblical mitzvah. And even the Rambam's prayer of a biblical mitzvah is very little. The way we daven today is for sure just a rabbinic mitzvah. And we saw in the Rambam how that developed. And there's the tension between non-fixed prayer. We don't want fixed prayer. We want it when you want. That's the ideal. But that's, it doesn't work. It may be work. The Rambam seems to say it worked until Ezra. When people were living in Israel, that system did work. Probably he doesn't say it, but it's probably tied in the Korbanot played a greater role. Tefillot is not exactly replacement of Korbanot, but it's connected Korbanot. It's aligned with Korbanot. It's not the replacement exactly. It's not that we first had Korbanot, now we daven. There was davening with Korbanot, but still they are connected. And I imagine during the temple time, Korbanot played a more central role and prayer a less central role. It's also part of the equation going on. But that tension is why we have a silent, you know, Shemoneh Esrei, but we're trying to show that Tefillah B'Tzibur is the essence of Tefillah. And that's why I loved Avodah Shebalev. That's why it's in the second paragraph of the Shema, not the first paragraph. And we talked about the difference between a Kiyuma Mitzvah and a Masa Mitzvah, right? How do you daven? You daven by picking up the Siddur and saying words, but that's the Masa, that's the action. That's not what davening is. The Kiyuma Mitzvah, the fulfillment, is in the heart, just like the fulfillment of simcha is to be happy on yontif, not to drink wine and eat meat, or tshuva, it's not to bang your heart and say alchei. That's the mechanics of tshuva, but the fulfillment of tshuva is to be a different person. So that's basically pretty much what we're focusing on. And yeah, there are different methods to come close to God, and the importance at the end is that tzibur is to focus on the communal aspects and the individual. That's between man and God, especially I would say in our time, right? Our attitude. There was a time when, yeah, a Jew who violated the Shabbat, that was a terrible thing. Like intermarriage used to be in Fiddler on the Roof. I tell them, yeah, they sat ship 150 years ago. That made sense because a Jew who intermarried was a big statement, and they knew it and you knew it. Everybody knew intermarriage was the way out. Today it's not true. Today, I teach non-religious kids, and a lot of these kids, I thank God, the vast majority are going to marry Jews. All the research shows they go to day school, they're going to marry Jews, even if they're not religious. But a lot of them, theoretically, what's wrong with intermarriage? You fall in love with the idea that you can't marry who you love is so anti-Western. If you're not religious, so why? I can, and then you have people say, yeah, my parents, I know my parents intermarried, you know, why not? I can be Jewish with an, it's like, that's the attitude today. So our attitude, that's the reality today. So our attitude has to change about how we do the individuals. That's what the Chazon Ish said already, even religious people, et cetera, et cetera. And that's important shuva, the Binyan Tzion, that today you can express your Judaism. And even if you're a Mechal Shabbos, but you're showing you do believe in God, you do care about Yiddishkeit. And that's why I think today it's so important. We should work all together. The problem is the assimilated Jew, not the Jew going to a reform shul. Yeah, okay, so we can try to learn with him, talk to him. The real problem is the 70% of Jews who don't go to shul on Yom Kippur, not the Jew who goes to reform shul on Yom Kippur. The 70%, and then we mentioned many times that the Baal Tshuva movement is statistically in trouble. The Baal Tshuva movement is much less robust than it used to be, because as the conservative movement dies, the Baal Tshuva movement dies, because that's where the Baal Tshuva are not coming from the people, very rarely coming from people of zero Jewish education. It's coming from the kid who had a bar mitzvah, they went to shul three times a year, but they didn't take Judaism so seriously. He gets turned on in college. Seder, beautiful. It's not coming from the Jew who doesn't go to Shul and Kippur very rarely. So I'm not saying that's the reason, but even from that practical point of view. Anyway, so we have to work together with all Jews, even assimilated Jews, whatever they can. Everybody wants to come to Washington. I don't know how many people are planning to go to Washington this week. All Jews. And it's nice, even if I understand, even there, I saw in the paper the other day, the Aguda is asking people to go, which is very rare for them. They don't normally do things like this. And Peace Now is asking people to go. So I think that's a beautiful thing, that the unity of Klal Yisrael should be seen in Shemaim, and God should hear our tefillot for good because of that. They're coming from the religious, not religious, right wing, left wing, middle, we're all Jews together. And sometimes it takes the goyim to remind us that the goyim don't care about our stupid, this right. He's modern Orthodox light and he's right wing modern Orthodox, he's left wing a good. The goyim don't care about that stuff. They don't care about this stuff. So we should care a little bit less, a little bit, certain things, but don't go crazy like everybody else. Okay. You don't have to agree with me, but let me just take the questions very quickly. Good morning. This morning will bring a promise of nature's many wonders. Okay. Autumn. Yeah, it is beautiful. Okay. Yeah. The American perspective. Yeah. You know what? But even if that were to be true, I'm saying that America is that the halacha lives in America. That's why the halacha. Rav Shachter would always tell us, you can't ask a shaila to poskim in Israel if you live in America. No, the halacha is the intersection between a never-changing Torah and an ever-changing real world. That's, the Torah never changes, but the world changes. Halacha is how to apply Torah to the real world. So where you are in the real world will affect halacha. So yes, in America, one thing can be allowed and in Israel not, and vice versa. That's, so having an American perspective doesn't mean the halacha is incorrect. I happen to think in this case, for many reasons why the halakha had to change about her attitude to non-religion. But yeah, it's fine. Growing up in a democracy affects how we change. Obviously, I'm influenced by growing up in the Western world, and I'm proud of that. I'm not ashamed to say that, yes, how I look at Judaism is a little bit, I mean, you try to be what you think is the truth, and the Torah's truth, and Torah demet, Moshe Amet. But yeah, I'm glad, you know, I grew up in a democratic country. I have certain values that I picked up because I grew up in Canada, and I'm proud of them. What can I tell you? Who's Rav Yaakov Weingarten? I don't even know who that is. Well, what did I mention? I don't know what that is. Even the 18 blessings, if you want to tell me, I'd be very happy to know. Okay. Hashem responds that he will not destroy the city for the sake of the city. It's not what I say, it's not all or nothing. You're right. He destroyed, right? We discussed the different ways of storm. The standard way is he won't kill the wicked people in the merit of the righteous people. The merit people will save them, but they have to be betocha ir. That's what we said. They have to be involved in the community. I forgot to mention that, right? The Rambam, if you separate from the community, even if you're observant, you can lose your share in the world come, the world to come. That's what the Rambam writes. What do you want? I can't help it. You would tell them to drive to shul on Shabbos to daven or not respond to that they're choosing to travel. Again, I'm not sure what the question is, but yes, I would tell an Orthodox Jew to stay at home rather than, that's obvious. But a non-Orthodox Jew, I would say to drive to shul. We don't, listen, what do you think? There'll be no Baal Tshuva movement today if the shuls, if Eshet Torah and Or Sameach and Lubavitch told people don't drive to shul. They don't talk about it. They don't talk about it. You get the shul, you get the shul. Obviously, because, to a religious shul, of course not. That would be terrible. But they're driving to go shopping, to go to the ball game. So obviously, better drive to shul. That's right. So you have to know when you rishu a halakhic rule, you have to know who you're talking to. You give one shuva to a religious Jew and one and a totally different response to a non-religious Jew. That's true all the time. Okay, was Shevet Levi considered Haredi? I don't know. We don't have Haredim before. It's a modern term, just like Orthodox is a modern term. There's no such thing as Orthodox and Conservative, Reform, Haredi. That's all made up, and maybe that's very bad. Maybe we should do away with all these titles. You have Jews. Some Jews observe more, some Jews observe less, and what can you do, right? I don't know. Shevet Levi had a transformation. They were Kanaim, right? They killed Shechem. I mean, that's interesting. Shimon, that's for another time. We can talk about why I was actually talking about that in my class in chat yesterday. Why Shevet Levi got to be chosen as Shevet Levi? Yeah, they didn't do the Chet Egel, but it's much more than that. Why didn't they do the Chet Egel? Who is Shevet Levi and the transformation of Shevet Levi? Levi and Shimon are the wild kids. You know, Yaakov, he curses them on his deathbed. Okay, anyway, but then they turn out to be the leaders of the Jewish people. That's probably connected. They took that fervor and that thing, and they channeled it to Avodah Hashem. Just like a Baal Tshuva is on a higher level. You take that negativity and you channel it positively. But okay, next week we'll also discuss why the rewards punish our material. That's exactly what I said. Obviously, you wrote this before. Yeah, please God, I will discuss next week why all the rewards of the Torah are material. Rally in Washington Tuesday, yes, 1 to 3 p.m. Yeah, I know we're sending from Toronto lots of buses. People are flying. I mean, the bus from our school at Chad is leaving, I think, 10 p.m. Monday night. Going to drive through the night, going to go to the rally and drive through the night to come back to Toronto. It's like a 11-12 trip by bus at the border. It'll be long. It'll be like a 11-12-hour drive. But they have a lot of buses going from Canada, too. And the Jewish reformers' children will have even less interest. Yeah, maybe, we have to make, our job is to make Judaism interesting for people. And if we fail, don't blame the reform, blame us. If Jews don't keep Shabbos, we're not doing something right. When's the last time you invited your reform neighbor into your house for a Friday night meal? I'm talking to myself too, right? Right? If you want other reform, stop keeping Shabbos. Okay, so invite them to your house for a Shabbos meal and then see what are you doing about it? If we don't show Judaism is beautiful and inspiring, why should people keep Judaism? It's our responsibility. Don't blame. That's what Judaism always does. When I was at a a lecture this week, whatever, I won't go into the whole thing. But when the rabbis say, the rabbis always blame ourselves, right? Somebody was talking, they say they're very upset at the rabbis. They always blame the victim. The rabbis are not blaming the victim. The rabbis are not saying the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. The Romans are good. It's our fault. No, that's not what the rabbis are saying. Of course, the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed because the Romans were powerful and they were conquering the world, blah, blah, blah. And we revolted, whatever. But what the rabbis say, what can we learn? Whenever the rabbis say, they're not saying this sin, and that's why you have 28 different opinions in the Talmud, because every rabbi is talking to his constituents. What can our community do? That's why the Sinat Chinam is only one of about 12 reasons, and I'm not exaggerating when I say they're like, there's 7 in Shabbos, 1 in Yuma, 1 in Baba Metzia, 1 in the Dorim Mitzvah that I can think of. Off the top of my head, 10 different reasons why the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. So rabbis, none of those are the reasons the temple was destroyed. Those are all reasons. Those are all messages we can learn from the destruction of the temple. You know, if we're weak, it's easier for our enemies. If we're protesting every week and the Jewish people are split, it's a lot easier for our enemies to attack us. That's just the reality of the world. That's it. It's not saying it's like a punishment for Sinat Chinam. So when we see Jews not keeping Shabbos, instead of blaming them, let's blame, quote unquote, blame the victim. You know, blame what are we doing to stop that? Don't criticize others. Say, what can we do? So it's hard. Of course, it's so much easier to put other people that we're great. We know the way and everybody else is terrible. We can learn a lot. They're, you know, Baruch Hashem, maybe I guess as I grew up in a wide ranging family, you know, I have cousins, all in Lakewood, and, my first cousin was the first woman to be ordained in Israel, and I'm very proud of them all. And, we get along, you know, quite well, and our family reunion was beautiful, and everybody came, and, you know, it's very nice, and everybody has what to contribute. You should do what you do is right, and you want to argue with them in a nice way, b'fakasha. But don't be proud, and let's work on what brings us to unite us as Jews. If the Goyim think we're one people, we better think we're one people. Okay, I don't want us to sermonize. I apologize for that. I'm here to learn about Tefillah, but I think it's very important. Okay, any other questions, comments? See, I'm not in school today, but that's why I can go a little bit longer. Okay, anybody have any questions, comments, criticisms? B'vakasha, please criticize. And yeah, I sent it out. I'm curious if anybody listened to my podcast. You don't have to listen, but if you do and you like it, very nice. And if you don't like it, please let me know so I can know how to make it better. But okay, want to wish everybody Shabbat Shalom, and we should hear good news and all good things. And as my friend said to me, I mentioned I was talking to a good friend of mine in Israel yesterday. We were driving to New York in the car. We had a long conversation. So I said at the end, Bisurat Tovot. So he said, Jay, I'm sick and tired of Bisurat Tovot. Here's what you got to say. Let's see if I remember it. You got to say Bisurat Tovot, Yeshuot v'nechamot, Nitzchanot u'nekamot. That's what you have to say. So I was like, so everything, you know, Bisurat Tovot, good tidings, Yeshuot v'nechamot, God should salvation, should save us, Yeshuot v'nechamot, comfort us. Nitzchonot, we should win, and Nekamot, we should avenge the blood of, you know, those who unfortunately have lost their life. So that's it. She said, I don't want to just hear Bisurat Tovot. I want to hear Bisurat Tovot, Yeshua, Nechamot, Nitzchonot, Nekamot. So, okay, I hear what he's saying, and we should hear good things, and God should bring Yeshua, Nechamot, and yeah, and Nitzchonot. Okay, everybody be well, Nekamot, whatever, and El Nekamot Hashem. That's what we see. He said, we say it every day in our Tefillah. God avenges the blood of the people. That's what can you do? It's very sad, but it's a reality of life. Sometimes we have to take revenge. What can I say? Okay, everybody. Shabbat shalom.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay.
Okay, yeah.